All right, everyone, welcome to a special episode here of Sloppy Spoilers. We're going to be jumping into the Batman, the animated series, since the anniversary is coming up. We got a great cast today. We have the great Monica Archer. How you doing, Monica?
I'm good. Good.
We have the goddess Freya. What's up?
Hey.
The random dude Josh.
Yo, yo, what's up, man? How you doing?
And we have the wonder from down under, Dodgy. How's it going, buddy?
Very well, brother. Thank you for having me.
He just said your stripper name.
I couldn't remember which one. I didn't quite know which one I wanted to go with Dodgy, so that one seemed most apt. Because Dodgy is a man of many names.
and faces.
But yeah, I'm a little sick, as you can hear, so I will try to talk as little as possible so you don't have to hear my congestion, but I could not sit out, even though I called out of work. But here's what we're going to do. We're just going to go around the horn first, and just what did the show mean to you? Where were you in your life when you first heard this or that sort of thing? So let's start, Freya. What does the Batman the Animated Series mean for you?
Well, Batman the Animated Series, it's essentially my childhood. I grew up watching this show with my brothers. It was my first introduction to superheroes at all. The most I ever got before was watching my brothers play the Batman Nintendo games. But, you know, as you know, those weren't exactly the best introduction to Batman. But, yeah, so it's just special to me because it introduced me to the world of superheroes. So, and it was, I got my first, you know, fictional crush. So,
who was your first fictional crush?
Bruce Wayne, of course.
Okay, okay. So. That's fair. That's fair. He is a playboy of sorts. So, that's forgivable. All right. We'll do all the ladies first. Monica, what is Batman the Animated Series mean for you?
It was also kind of my first introduction to superheroes, and I mainly remember watching it with my dad a lot, and because my dad used to read Batman comics when he was growing up, and he like told me stuff about Batman, like when we would watch the show, and he'd talk about like things that he knew about Batman. So, and a lot like Star Wars, it has a, you know, my dad and I really bonded over it. And again, it also just introduced me to superheroes for the first time. And I remember watching it when I was, I was really young. And my mom like thought it was too violent and stuff. My dad was like, no, it's cool. Like it's Batman. She can watch it. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'm not sure how old everyone is here. I'm not going to make everyone give ages. But I was, when this show first started, I was, 92? I was probably 3, going on 4. And of course, you know, the show went on for years and reruns, of course. So, yeah, definitely understand what you mean. It is not anything like any cartoons that we have today. Well, here, Josh, we'll go on to you. What is, where were you when this show came out?
So, oh God, I'm going to date myself on this one. So I remember the first sort of preview that Fox had released, just showing just that intro to the show, you know, not even jumping into an episode, but it was like coming soon and you see it pan up and you see Batman standing on top of the skyscraper. And, oh my hell, I lost my shit. And much like what Freya said, this was my childhood growing up. You know, I've been a Batman fan since I was 2, you know, watching, the late Adam West and the reruns of Batman 66, and then seeing, Michael Keaton, don the cowl, that was Batman for me. So to finally have a dark cartoon based off of the comics was something really, really exciting and really special. And what really makes this even more special, you know, fast forwarding a year ago today, Freddie, I know you were there. Freya, I think you were there as well, where we actually got to sit at the feet of Mark Hamill, who we all know is the voice of the Joker, and actually see him in person.
Whoa.
That was a year ago today.
You know how much I love Star Wars. Oh, you're so jealous.
It was honestly it was cool to see him, you know, talk about Star Wars and all of that. But the moment he did the Joker's voice, at a split second, he's talking about how he loves Comic-Cons, and then he all of a sudden says, and the Joker loves Comic-Con because it's all an homage to me. And you're like, oh my, did that just happen? Like, oh my God, this just happened. He just did the Joker voice. You know,
it was beautiful. Almost crying.
I did cry. I think I cried about as much when he did that as hearing Kevin Conroy do the voice for in person.
Nice.
So, this cartoon really is a pinnacle event of my childhood. So,
very good. All right, Dodgy, what does it show mean for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just into comics about 1992, and I'm significantly older than everyone else here. So I saw it when it came out. I was around 14, and I came from a generation where I believe the 80s was the golden age of Saturday morning cartoons. And I think in carrying over to the 90s, I believe it was either Batman, the X-Men animated series, and Ren and Stimpy were my, you know, I suppose they were the three key Saturday morning cartoons that I watched during the 90s. And one of the things that really captured me with Batman was that friggin' awesome introduction to the show. And I mean, like, you watch that and you're like, it's a masterpiece. I just went and watched a couple of episodes yesterday just to relive those moments. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better than anything that's on Cartoon Network. Absolutely. Like, that introduction alone is enough to make you go, ooh, I just want to sit there and watch it. The thing I love about it the most, it's an amalgamation of the 1940s Superman cartoons with the, you know, the soft palette of paint, you know, the watercolors. Then you've got the, you know, the Tim Burton Batman, as well as what you would get from the, say, the Neil Adams comic strips. You know, it's just amazing. And, you know, oh, man, like, enough said, but I mean, for those of you who haven't watched it, oh my God, just do yourself a favor, buy the DVDs or go online and research and find out where you can watch it. That's all I got to say.
You know,
it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it still is.
There's an app on the Xbox One Marketplace that actually lets you watch all of them.
Nice.
You have to deal with ads and stuff like that, but it's you're able to watch it.
You know, actually, the one thing that I have against some of those sites, because the Amazon one in particular does not have the same intro. They have the new Batman Adventures or the Batman and Superman intro, which is really odd.
It's not for all of them, I don't think. The problem is I have some of it. I think I have most of it on DVD, so the only ones I was watching on Amazon were like the few I didn't have.
Yeah.
So I like have no idea if it. I just thought that the ones I didn't have that intro. So maybe that's not true, and maybe I just like.
Well, because I went and bought them because I hated that they didn't have the right intro. So I went and bought all the seasons, and the ones I bought had the right ones. So I don't know why they did that. It was so weird. Like, because I know that was in the pilot, and when I watched, you know, I'm rewatching it on Amazon one year. And I was like, wait a minute, this is not the intro.
Because I didn't watch, I only watched like the very, I think it was like the last one, some of the like end ones I didn't have on DVD for whatever reason.
Yeah, because I think that's technically a separate series. It's like Adventures of Batman and Robin or the new Batman Adventures.
Yeah.
They kept changing names, same show. But
I remember getting mad because I like bought all of them and then like it wasn't in there. And it was like when I bought all of Clone Wars, but it wasn't all in there. And I was like, why does this keep happening to me?
Yes, that's Murphy's Law. And something interesting too about that intro is that is really, that was like just kind of a teaser that the creators, Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, and Eric Radomski, I always forget to say his name, but they kind of just showed that, like, hey, by the way, it's just like this little short thing we put together to show like what the show could be about. And that's why it's kind of a story. Most intros aren't a story. You know, it's Batman chasing down these bank robbers, and like then that just became the intro after a while. You know, after they developed the show. But yeah, it's definitely shaped my life, and not to mention, this show is the reason for all of DC Animated, because after this we got Superman, and after that we got the Justice League, the Batman Beyond,
Unlimited,
we got, Justice League Unlimited,
Young Justice. Yeah. Teen Titans. Sorry. I like DC Animated, can I say?
Hey, that's why we're all here, because we all love them. So all of this is just based off of this amazing show that's for kids and not for kids at the same time. That's why when I watch, when I'm with my friends and, like, their kids are watching, you know, TV, or, you know, my nieces and nephews, I'm just watching their TV shows. I'm like, ugh, this is what you guys watch?
I was just saying that I feel like we still have some shows that are both for kids and adults, but it's rarer. It's not the usual. I feel like there was, and I feel like Batman the Animated Series started that trend too, where like there were a lot of shows like that. Like Invader Zim was like that. I would even say that went on until about like Kim Possible. Like Kim Possible is like that. There's a lot of shows that were like that, starting in the 90s and up until like the mid to late 2000s, and then that kind of all died out. Gravity Falls, like here and there, but they're all only like two seasons. They get canceled.
Sure.
I guess Rebels is like that. Clone Wars is like that, but Star Wars is just its own thing.
Yeah. But, well, you know, the big problem with TV, with cartoons, is they're driven not by views, but by toy sales. So if their toys don't sell, they get cut off. But
teenagers buy more toys than anyone else. Like that, like I don't understand why that wouldn't mean to make it for older people. If anything, that's more of an incentive to make it for older people. Teenagers are literally just disposable income.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've been to anime conventions. I've seen people drop like $600 on
an anime. That was all I did as a teenager.
No,
and all of the anime and all of Japanese companies are making our teenagers money when we could be making it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know. Japan made all of my money as a teenager.
And Joshua, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, I said, of course people can drop that much money at conventions. They all live in their basement, in their mom's basement. But going back to what Dodgy was saying about the intro and how it truly is a masterpiece, it's also one of the few, and I want to say it's probably the only one, but I may be wrong in making that assumption. If I am right, cool. It's, you know, it deserves it. But it's one of the very few shows where the title of the show is nowhere in the intro.
Yeah.
It's not said. It's not, you know, there's no text on the screen.
There's no catchy song.
Well, there is a catchy song.
But not sing along. Yeah. It's Danny Elfman. It's, you know.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Because you didn't sing along with that? I sure did.
That's fair.
I mean, because it's not even at the very end. I was trying to think. I think the Invader Zim intro only has the title card at the very, very end.
Yeah. See, this has nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Zim intro is also pretty. Zim also had a pretty solid intro.
Yeah, but you know why? Because Batman needs no introduction. He's been around, and even more so today. I mean, Batman's been around for, what are we at? It's 80 years almost. So like everyone's grandfathers know, and great grandfathers probably know who Batman is. So, you know, it's just a generation. It's a thing that's part of our culture now. But yeah.
Worth it.
Well, here, let's go through on best episodes. We'll go in reverse order this time. So, Dodgy, what was some of your favorite episodes or scenes?
I think my favorite episode of all time would probably be Robin's Reckoning, part one and two. And I'm sorry, I know I probably took someone's, but...
Yeah, you did. You took mine. Go ahead.
Let me spoil it for you. No, the reason why it was so impactful was the scene when you find out about, you know, the Flying Graysons, because we all know the story. Like, my first introduction to that storyline was in the, I think it was Batman Beyond. One of the movies. I can't remember the name of it. It was the first one directed by Schumacher.
Oh, yeah. That was Batman Forever.
Yeah, Batman Forever. It was the first time I've actually seen his origin story, because I wasn't really reading Batman back then. But just seeing that scene and just the art portraying that scene, especially when you see the rope just hanging, and then you just see the reaction of the crowd, and everyone in the crowd except for Bruce Wayne was like, you know, almost like a background scene, which was tremendous. Like, that art alone just was very gripping, and you could see why that won a Primetime Emmy Award, because of the, I suppose, the emotions behind it. And very subtle, it was very subtle, not a lot of dialogue around it, except for when Robin says, hey, that's the guy from the tent, you know. It was just amazing. That's one of my all-time favorites. But my absolute favorite was Perchance to Dream. Reason for that is because that was, I remember watching it at home on a Saturday morning, go, what the fuck is going on? Seriously. You know, because everything was put forward to you, and you're like, man, I have no idea what the hell is going on. You know, Batman is married to the Catwoman. His parents are still alive, and you're like, what? You know, seriously, what on earth is going on here? Until you realize that it's the Mad Hatter poisoned him. And, you know, and that's the thing about this show, is that every villain, an A-rated villain or a Z-rated villain, are all given the absolute limelight. Like, every episode that's given to a villain is owned by the villain. And I just love that, because you don't have definitely you have Joker in some episodes, but he's not the only villain. Mm. And, I mean, in the comics, right, you'd have villains who are, you know, Z-rated villains get their asses wiped even before they say anything. In this show, they're given the grand stage. And I don't think there's any other show that would actually do that. And, I mean, if you look at the gallery of villains, I mean, oh, my gosh, you'd be in awe, because everyone is given their own stage and, you know, and give Batman a run for his money, which is what you want to see. Like, Batman is Batman, but you'd like to see the villains sort of get one up on him to a certain degree. And that's why I think the Mad Hatter, because prior to the show, I'd never heard of the character. Like, I knew of him from, you know, Alice in Wonderland, but other than that...
Sure, not as a Batman villain.
Yeah, exactly, and and just what he gave to Batman was like, wow, this was amazing. Great episode. But yeah, I'm really excited to hear what you guys have to say.
Good, that's a solid list right there. And you're right, very few shows serve up, you know, like you said, C-list villains like Batman the Animated Series. So Josh, what are some of your favorites?
Well, you know, since I can't bring up Robin's Reckoning, thanks, Dodgy. Cool.
Don't take mine.
I probably won't.
Think you will.
So, what one of my absolute favorite episodes, and it always will be The Laughing Fish. This is a very...
Oh, that one's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a classic Joker episode. Again, playing off of the awesome memories that I have from a year ago today, you know, Mark Hamill's performance in this was amazing. You know, just some of the quotes from it are memorable. You know, the Joker's pleading his case why he should trademark this fish that has this smile. And he goes, you know, the chicken doesn't even have the guy's mustache, you know, making reference to Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Chicken. You know, that one was just absolutely amazing. One of the best episodes. We really get to see kind of Batman in different scenarios to stop the Joker, you know, using his mask as a decoy. To prevent the cat who's been poisoned by the fish, to try and protect the guy that they're trying to protect. We obviously know didn't go over so well. But yeah, honestly, any of the Joker episodes were great. Joker's Wild was another one. And that also included Poison Ivy in the episode as well. So, Christmas with the Joker, another amazing. So I've left it open for a lot of people. Hopefully I didn't steal any of yours. If I did, bummer.
That's good. You know, my, honestly, any episode with Mark Hamill in it is phenomenal. He is an A1 voice actor. And for me, to me, the number one Joker. So, I mean, it's really hard to, like, I mean, to pick one of the Joker episodes. You got to even say a couple. But one thing I like that you pointed out, and I thought about the Laughing Fish episode when I was preparing for this, and I thought this show did something great as far as, you know, it's adapting a work that's already been made. And they have three types of episodes. They have straight from the comics. Like, there's a few episodes that are just lifted from the comics, which is perfect because we see those. And a TV show is a great way to do it because, like, oh, man, that's, you know, it's a one-off episode. I like to see that. They also have adaptations where they, like, take pieces from different episodes or from different issues, which is, like, the Laughing Fish. I've heard there's like, two or three different comics that they pull to put that one together, and I love that.
Yeah, and I've got one of them, and it's awesome, and it was spot on.
And they go completely original sometimes. Like, no characters that are from the comics. You know, we got Harley Quinn. We got Nora Freeze. There's a lot of characters that this show created just because they decided to go completely original. And plenty of villains they created, too, just for this. Most of them are C-list, D-list, F-list, sure. But they weren't afraid to get away from the big names in order to tell a good story. So here, Monica, let's hear your list.
So, speaking of Nora Freeze, Heart of Ice. Heart of Ice is probably my favorite episode. I love Mr. Freeze.
Won an Emmy, too.
It did, because it's fantastic. I remember, even as a kid, like, how bad I felt for this guy. And, like, I love, again, just Mr. Freeze is one of those villains that I absolutely love that he's not really evil. He's sort of this, like, very kind of free agent. It's almost like a version of Darth Vader who, like, didn't go all the way because he still had a chance of, like, not fucking everything up. So I just like how everything he does is motivated by his devotion to one person.
Yeah.
And, like, how much that plays off of Batman's story and how, like, and like how much you see Batman deal with the fact that, like, you know, like what he would do to save his parents if that was still an option. And Freeze is like this dark mirror of, like, how far a person will go to save someone they love.
Right.
And I think that he's such a good Batman villain. I think he's such an interesting character. I love Mr. Freeze. I think, because for me, it's a lot about the characters that the show made. I love, this show was the first, unless this came from a comic, I think this was the first iteration of the Scarecrow poisons the water supply under Arkham Asylum. And that's been reused like a million times. It's in Batman Begins. Paul Dini reuses it in Arkham Asylum. And it's his to reuse, because it's such a good plan. Like, I don't know why we'd put the water reservoir under Arkham Asylum, but if we did it, might as well put some fear gas in it. I like the Scarecrow episodes a lot. And I think that for me also the animated series defines Batman to me. And I would say that what defines, like, grittier Batman for me is Arkham Asylum, because it's just the series, but, like, a little bit grittier. So, like, the movies don't define gritty Batman for me. For me, Arkham Asylum is that. And then, like, the slightly cleaner version is the show. And I guess those two things aren't that different, but they're just different enough.
Sure.
And I also really love all the Riddler episodes. And I know that the writers talked about how hard they were to write, because trying to come up with puzzles that were difficult, and it is really hard. Like, I think Riddler is a great character, and I love thinking about how to use someone like Riddler. And he's a super hard character to use, and I know that they had a hard time with it, but I think they nailed it every time.
Definitely.
So I really appreciate a lot of the Riddler episodes. Even if I think that the take, I don't know. I like Riddler in the animated series. I really like him in Arkham Asylum. He's great in that. But I love him though. I love everything about everything that's wrong with him. But yeah, no, I think, definitely the stuff with like that plan for Scarecrow. And I think it's what you were saying about the villains really owning, their individual episodes. I think that they took people like Mad Hatter or even Scarecrow, who might not seem immediately threatening, and really Deeney and the other writers really took the concepts of these people and made them into something threatening.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really great. But yeah, no, I think probably Heart of Ice is my favorite episode though. I don't know why it made such a huge impression on me though.
You know, if you ever hear Paul Dini talk about that episode, he's had plenty of amazing interviews. Like, he gets teary eyed talking about Heart of Ice. Like, that story is
I know. The story. I've also read Paul Dini's autobiography, which is also super moving. Nice. But I've read some interviews about Heart of Ice. It's great. Like, and again, this is one of the reasons I love this episode, because you can tell how much emotion went into making it.
If you look at the impact that had, there's a reason why in the season one DVD that they put that episode in with the commentary from Bruce Timm. So that in itself should show, you know, especially for you listeners who have not seen it, go pick up the season one DVD, and you'll understand why this is such a powerful episode.
Yeah,
that really is the
best. Because Freeze was not that character before that episode either.
No, he was pretty lame.
Yeah, that's true.
He was just another shitty ice villain. I mean, and I say that, and then because I always joke about how DC has too many ice villains, and then I like actually kind of love all of them in their own way, and I'm like, oh, but I don't know who I'd get rid of. But like, no, like he was just kind of another Captain Cold, Icicle Senior type, and then after this, he's not that.
Yeah, so
he's like definitely the best of the ice villains.
If you pick any of the Emmy episodes, you can't go wrong. And for a cartoon geared for children that has multiple Emmys and Emmy nominations, like it really speaks a lot to the show that it really was a lot of great work that went into it. All right, Freya, the penultimate list. What are some of your favorite episodes or scenes?
You can say the whole show. It's okay.
I do love the whole show. it was really hard for me to pick episodes. Like, it would be easier to pick episodes I didn't like the best. But I got it down to two that I absolutely love. The first one was actually Harley's Holiday. Mm. Mostly because...
Yep, that's a good one.
I did like Harley Quinn in the animated series because it was her first appearance ever and she was new and interesting, and I like this episode because it was mostly not so much focused on Batman. It was Harley Quinn after being released into society and showing how difficult it is to be back in society after being incarcerated for so long. And it also showed more of a Bruce Wayne or a Batman's personality and how he actually, at least in this version, he really does want to help these people. And he actually really cares, and like he even goes out of his way as Bruce Wayne to go up and talk to Harley Quinn, and to be really nice to her. And I think he takes her out to like dinner or lunch or something. And at the very end, and then of course there's misunderstandings, and she goes back to being crazy, and so he has to go back to being Batman and catch her, and you know everything. But at the very end, he buys her the dress that she was, you know. accused of stealing, even though she didn't understand that she was stealing it, and he bought her the dress, and then of course Harley Quinn kisses Batman, just proving that he can get any woman he wants. So I really liked it just because of the whole more of Bruce Wayne's background. He's not just going to He doesn't get kicks out of beating people up. He actually does care about these people. And actually, that's another reason why I like the show in general, because they go out of their way to show that for a lot of these villains, he was friends with them or he had, you know, some sort of connection with them. And so it's really personal for him. Another episode I really liked, and I think it was based off of an arc in one of the Batman issues. It was Almost Got Him. And it's
that one's good.
Yeah, with like all the main cast of villains just talking about like their biggest how they almost killed Batman. I think it was based off of where were you on
that was Batman season something? Yeah, that was season 1, episode 35.
Yeah, something like that. And I loved it because it felt like you're getting multiple episodes in one with everyone's story. I also liked just Killer Croc's story. Just made me laugh just because of how stupid
you know, the one thing about the show, and I love that you brought up that episode in particular, because the show really did a great job about showing those different perspectives. One of the other ones, one of the other episodes that really kind of stood out that did the same sort of thing was Legends of the Dark Knight. And that was, I think, season 4 when they had changed kind of the style and the look of Batman. But it was the first time when we really got to see an animated version of each iteration of Batman throughout time, especially Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, where we have Michael Ironside, who was the voice of Jester from Top Gun. He was the voice of Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell, but he was the voice of Batman in this. And that's when we really get to see that first Dark Knight Returns animated version. And just that scene telling the leader of the mutants where he just says, I'm the surgeon and you're on the table, and he breaks his leg. Love it. Absolutely love that scene. Always will.
Oh, one episode I didn't mention, because in Harley's Holiday, it reminded me of this. I love all of the stuff where it's like the villains try to reform. I like love that. Mm-hmm. And I think the one I love the best is the Penguin one. So sad.
He's always trying to reform himself.
His episode of that, like everyone else's, is like, you know, with Riddler, it's like he kind of wants to be good, but like he kind of just wants to be an asshole and be smarter than everyone else, right? And you're like, well, okay, Riddler, but you kind of like earned this. And then Harley's is like, you know, she very quickly jumps to thinking everyone hates her or whatever. But like Penguin just gets like used and tricked, and like he, like the universe will not let him be decent. And that one was just hard to watch, because that one felt like it wasn't his fault at all. and there's so little that Batman and Batman's really involved in that one. I would say even more than Harley's Holiday, as both Batman and Bruce Wayne. Because there's like the whole rich, like there, it's like his rich douchebag Bruce Wayne friends who are doing this to Penguin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's like he's really involved in like every way he can be, and he can't stop it. And yeah, that one I thought was also really great.
You know, there's what, upwards of over 100 episodes of Batman the Animated Series, and it's, you know, renames, and they're all good episodes. To be honest, I mean, if you just put a random DVD in, I'm not going to be mad at which DVD you pick. Like, it'll be fine.
Right.
One of the few shows you can do that with. All right. So, Johnny sent us a little clip. He's on vacation, but he wanted to chime in. So I'm going to drop it in right around now, because he has a few episodes here. So yeah, so yeah, one of the episodes that Johnny picked is Over the Edge, and it is a phenomenal episode. And it starts off, Johnny doesn't go too deep into it, but I will because I love this episode, and he took it from me. I don't hold any grudges, though. But basically, it starts off, like, in the middle of the action, and you're like, wait, is this a part two? Like, did I miss something? Because as a kid, I thought I missed something. And then it wasn't until I was older that I realized that, you know, oh, no, this is just one episode. But basically, it starts off with Batman's on the run from Gordon. Gordon and all them are kicking in the doors to the Batcave. And you're like, what is going on? And then you find out Batgirl dies. And you're like, wait a minute. She like falls off of a building and dies. And you're like, wait a minute. As a kid, I'm like, wait, you can't do this to me. And I mean, in the end, it's all in Batgirl's mind. But it's just like the worst case scenario for Batman. For a Batman episode. And they said the only reason why they could get away with it was because it turned out to be a dream sequence. But, like, they really had to, like, push for this episode. Because this is violence against a teenage girl. And it was, you know, it's technically a children's show.
That was the thing about the show in general. It was they had to fight censors anyway, doing essentially the implied violence.
Yeah. And, you know, they apparently broke some law about how dark it could be. The amount of black in the show was too much. Like, I don't know. There's some law or something. I don't know exactly what it's called. But
like a code? Like an old school, like, Hays Code type of deal?
Like I don't know. I guess the screen was just too dim or something. Like, that's how much black they use. Because, you know, they draw on black paper. So it's, you know, it's a dark, like, visually a dark show. And so, yeah, they ended up having to, like, add more color or something because just visually it broke some standard, FCC standard. and another episode I wanted to bring up is I Am the Night, another dark episode. This is the anniversary of Bruce's parents' death, and he's kind of, like, questioning his mission because it's like we know Batman's war is endless. And you'd think with how great he is, the war would be over one day, but it never is. So he's like, you know, how much good am I really doing? Like, I've won a few battles, sure, but the war hasn't stopped. And so everyone's trying to talk him out of it. Leslie Tompkins, Alfred, Dick. And then everyone seems to be really mad at him who aren't trying to comfort him. He saves some punk kid voiced by Seth Green who's like, hey, Batman, I don't need you. And, you know, just this little punk. And then, what's his name? Gordon ends up, getting shot by the Jazz Man, since we're calling out, you know, Z-list characters dodgy. The Jazz Man, almost killed, Gordon. And so Bullock's mad at him. So everyone's just mad at him and he's moping. And, you know, I would imagine that Batman over the years has to have this every so often, where he has to, like, really contemplate, should I just give up? You know, am I really doing that much good? And, of course, we know he chooses to, you know, step up and he saves Gordon again, But
well, I mean, I think that this is kind of what I like about Arkham Asylum is, like, a kind of artistic continuation of the series. Arkham Asylum brings up that question a lot of, like, and I think that there's some other stuff that things that bring this up, too, of, like, is Batman by existing kind of making a petri dish of only the, like, he makes the villains better because they survive.
Sure.
So, like, the villains who keep doing stuff get better, and I feel like that's kind of a new theme in a lot of superhero stuff. As I thought, say, like, some of the Marvel Netflix stuff is flawed, I thought that was what I liked about the Luke Cage show, is that it's only, like, the best two villains who were left at the end of the show, and before they weren't that threatening. And I think that Batman deals with that, like, a lot. Yeah. Like, that's, like, Batman's whole life is, like, these people, most of them weren't villains to begin with. Like, these were, like, people who were maybe at the top of their career field. Batman usually finds out they were sort of corrupt, like Crane, or sometimes Riddler's like this too, right? And so it's, like, these people that he finds out are, like, sort of corrupt, he gets them arrested, then they become these crazy supervillains who are, like, bent on, sometimes it's not his fault at all, but sometimes it is because he catches them. Sometimes it's because they have no other recourse than to become crazy supervillains now that everyone knows they're criminals.
Sure. And even at the beginning of the episode too, of that particular episode, when Batman's reading the newspaper, it said Cobblepot beat his charges and he's getting released. So it's like, man, like, even the people I arrest are going to be on the streets eventually anyways. So, yeah, I mean, it's a real struggle. They talk about that at the end of Batman Begins. You know, you put on the cape and the cowl, you know, they start, you know, they step their game up. And, you know, that's how the Joker's born and stuff like that. You know, even if you're reading current Batman, we see Kite Man being born because of the violence that's around because of Batman. So, yeah, it's definitely a psychological dilemma.
Wasn't there an episode called The Trial that dealt with that exact thing, that Batman, that the villains got, they captured Batman, I believe, the new district attorney, and they're trying to prove that he is the cause of their, who they are, and, you know, they're going to electrocute him or something.
Yeah, no, that was, I believe that was the,
it was called The Trial.
Well, was it okay? Because also in Over the Edge, the episode where Gordon reveals, you know, Batman's Bruce Wayne, when everyone finds out that he's rich, all the villains are like on talk shows, like, you know, he's the reason why I'm so crazy. You know, I'm suing him for everything he's got. So, you know, I mean, that was more just them being greedy.
So,
but yeah, that conversation was up a lot.
So the episode was just called Trial.
Okay.
And that was it was season 2, episode 9, which was funny because Joker was the judge and he's wearing like the old 1700s.
I remember this. Wig.
Yeah, I like that episode a lot.
You know, the other episode that I'm surprised didn't come up was The Demon's Quest.
That's a great episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because they bring the iconic look of Batman in the cowl with no shirt on. Straight from the comics.
And there was just something, and I don't know what it was, but the way that they created Ra's al Ghul for this was iconic. That's honestly the only way you can say it. And to hear how kind of that mutual respect that Ra's and Batman have with each other, even though, you know, Ra's wants him dead. It was just so well done. David Warner is Ra's al Ghul. Phenomenal job.
I think that the animated series is one of the few iterations of Ra's that I really like. Normally, I'm kind of like, Ra's, Talia needs to just stab you and take the League of Shadows because you're too crazy to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I really like him in the animated series. I really enjoy him.
Funny fact about that episode, Frank Welker was also in the episode as just one of the thugs. Now, for listeners who don't know who Frank Welker is, you may know him as Freddy from Scooby-Doo.
Oh.
He was also the voice of Megatron from the original Transformers.
Yep.
Frank has done so many voices, and he's actually been in Batman the Animated Series a number of times, but like that one in particular was, he had a very small role. But again, in the world of voice acting, that's a big name.
It is.
Random thought.
No, very good thought.
I actually think that this, we were talking about how DC Animated kind of owes a lot of its success to this show, because DC Animated has a history of having good voice acting. Like Young Justice had a really good voice cast. Even something they did really recently, and obviously the animated series had a fantastic voice cast. And I think that's sort of something that the animated series set as a precedent, for like having these shows that are aimed at kids and adults that have, you know, really high end voice acting, and especially in America, that's not like in Japan, that's a huge art form, but here it's not what it is there. And I think that DC animated stuff though tends to be like a cut above everything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that I would throw in there is, and Freddie and Freya, since both of you are on the Definitive Crusade, you might be able to, you'll most likely agree with me on this one. The biggest thing that we truly got from the show is now we have a definitive sound of what Batman sounds like, of what the Joker sounds like. So when you're reading the books, when you're reading for getting ready for an episode of the Definitive Crusade, when you see Batman talking in the books, whose voice do you hear? You're going to hear Kevin Conroy.
I always hear Kevin Conroy.
You're not going to hear Bale. You're not going to hear Keaton. You're not going to hear anyone else. Even some of the voice actors that are doing Batman now, like the one that they've had for Son of Batman and Batman versus Robin, who does a great job, even Bruce Greenwood, who voiced Batman for Under the Red Hood, they're great, but they're not the voice of Batman that we all think of when we're reading the books.
Exactly.
Same thing with the Joker.
It's Mark Hamill for me.
And I think that that's the only person who I think that isn't true for is I do think that because you hear him so much and it's so definitive, Wally Wingert in Arkham Asylum is who I hear when I hear Riddler now. And that's the only person. And because he did a great job though. Also, he really like a really great job. So I think that I do hear. And it's not, but I think, I don't know if I would even have been able to redefine Riddler if Conroy and Hamill hadn't been on those games.
Yeah.
Because the games had the same integrity to me that the show did of like grounding me in Batman and the Joker. Right.
Yeah. Well, sure. And even the games, like Kevin Conroy is quoted as saying, in doing the voice acting for the games, the fans know the voice just as well as Kevin does. And, the producers of the game and Freya, I don't know if you had seen this interview, but Kevin was saying that they wanted him to try and say it a different way, or they wrote a line a particular way. And Kevin's like, no, the fans will call us out on it if we go this route. And really the success of the game is because of Bruce Timm and Paul Dini. Hats off to you guys for creating such an amazing show that really changed DC Comics.
For sure.
That's a very bold statement, but a factual one.
Well, I feel like there's like three pillars to modern Batman. And it starts with The Dark Knight, or rather Frank Miller's Batman with The Dark Knight Returns, Year
Killing
One,
Killing Joke,
that era, and then we jump into Batman 1989 with Michael Keaton, then we jump into Batman the Animated Series, and honestly, if I go fourth, I gotta go with like Batman Begins or The Dark Knight, as like these are the things that have been keeping Batman alive. We're coming up 30 years.
I think that Arkham Asylum and Arkham City deserve to be on that list because those were the first, those were the first games that were that were from comic books that were anywhere near as successful or popular as they were.
Yeah.
That were as highly rated. Like they were the best rated, best comic book games of all time. I loved those games. Like that was my getting back. Like I had been into Batman and when I was a kid and in high school, but that was me getting back into Batman in college. Was me playing those games.
The only game I would put up with it is Spider-Man. That's like the only game comes close. But the story's not as great. But the gameplay is really good. But
I think that Arkham Asylum story is mediocre, but City's story is spectacular.
It gets better so with Arkham, each movie. I mean, with each game, except Origins.
So I want to hear Freya's opinion on this one. Obviously being part of the side scrollers and being a lover of games, I want to hear what she says.
I'm going to have to upset a lot of people because I did not like the Spider-Man games.
Oh, okay.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
The best part of the Spider-Man games is if you miss like quick time events, you just everyone dies. That's my favorite thing. But I hate the Spider-Man games. But yeah, I agree that Arkham Asylum and Arkham City were the best comic book hero games. I would even say still they are the best. Voice acting's fantastic. It's dark. It's a little bright for my taste, but it's dark enough. It fits the characters. And honestly, the story was kind of wasn't the best, but at the same time, you know, it's better than a lot of even just games in general. But yeah, I love those games, and even my friends who don't like Batman love those games. So it really, and it helped bring in newer people into appreciating or even liking Batman. Because I know that some people don't like, as we were talking about earlier, the newer cartoons just, they're not as good.
No.
They're not the same. And so with the video game.
Although I do like Young Justice, I will come out and say it. I enjoy it.
That is phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, here let's do some last thoughts and wrap it up here. Let's I don't know what order we're gonna go in. Let's start with Dodgy here.
Mm-hmm.
Last thoughts.
Last thoughts. I mean, you know, you guys came up with a lot of solid points, and it also makes me want to go back and rewatch a lot of these episodes because, frankly, it's probably been 20 years since I've actually watched the show. So for me, it's almost like I'm running on, you know, past memories, and I can remember a lot of stuff, but what you guys have brought up also triggered some new memories. And like, I did watch a bit of this, but I think I need to rewatch it. But when I rewatched the Robin's Reckoning, I think it became better watching it the second time after so long, because of the fact that the you know, it's not, it is a kid's cartoon, but I think it's an all ages cartoon, which is even better because I can watch it now and have a newfound respect for it. And I don't think any other cartoons, like I rewatch, you know, some of the old G.I. Joe cartoons and cringe, or the old He-Man cartoons, and I cringe because they're horrible. But when I watch Batman, it's a different story. It's still amazing, even to today's standards.
You know, I agree. I actually might rewatch it because I was like reading up on like some of the episodes. I was like, I don't remember this at all. Like, there were some episodes that really stood out and some that just didn't. So I think I'm going to I'm gonna add it to my my binge list. You know, it's only 100-something episodes, so I won't take anything.
Weekend.
Let me see. Let's go, Monica. Last thoughts here.
Just again, like it's. I like listening to all of you guys too, and hearing. Because I guess this comes up even with a lot of friends of mine, like how much this show really defined Batman to not just one generation, but like I would say, you know, at least a couple, because of all of the, like, we're a pretty varied mix of ages. And I even know younger people. I have younger cousins who've seen the show, who I've shown it to, and also who have played the Arkham games, which is, you know, very much in its legacy. And just how much, like, specifically Paul Dini and Bruce Timm have really defined what we know as Batman, starting with this show.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's kind of my takeaway, is like the impact that it has is really phenomenal, and also just its legacy on DC animation quality wise, just in terms of voice acting, and also just as kind of keeping cartoons, at least for the most part, trying to keep cartoons as a medium that's kids and adults, because even now, like now they're going to restart Young Justice, so like even now, like DC is still doing that, and I feel like that all started with this.
Definitely. 100% did. Let me see. Let's go, Freya. Last thoughts here.
Well, I'll just say it. Batman the Animated Series, actually, it was so good. I even watched the crossover episodes with the Superman TV show.
Which we know how much you love Superman. Anyone who knows me.
Yeah, exactly. I absolutely despise Superman. But because of how great this show was and how perfect the characters were, it made me actually really even enjoy the crossovers with the character that I absolutely despise. So, you know, it did that. So it's fantastic in my mind. Plus, it once again shows that Batman can get anyone because he even got Lois Lane. So, yeah.
He is a boss. That was a great episode. If I remember right, like, wasn't he like spying on Clark, like from like a couple buildings over, so right?
That was actually from the Batman Superman animated movie that came out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a good one. Oh, that was probably Public Enemies or something.
No, they actually did it was called the Batman Superman movie that came out.
Is that the one with Supergirl?
No,
it didn't have Supergirl. It had Joker in it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I know which one you're talking about now. Okay.
There's so many. It's like, damn, like which one's which? Yeah. Well, you know what, Freya, I respect you for going through that horrible ordeal and putting yourself through Superman episodes just to see some more Batman. So that is high praise. Josh, all right, last thoughts here.
Ooh. All right, so this show really changed superhero cartoons. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Just the way in which they're created, the voice acting was phenomenal. The episodes themselves really utilized the source material. And if it wasn't for this show, we would not have Harley Quinn. The fact that she is now part of Batman canon because of this.
For better or worse.
Exactly. You know, there's so much that has come from this show. And for people who have not watched it, you guys are doing a disservice to yourself. You really are. If you've never ever watched an episode of this, hell, go to YouTube. They're out there. Easily you can find them. We've mentioned a lot of great episodes. The toys that came from this, amazing. I have a bunch. There's no shame in that. It's also back when Batman had fabric capes on the action figures. They don't do that anymore. Just amazing.
Very good.
Honestly, this could be a whole separate podcast on just how amazing the show is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So my last thoughts are just it really did have a massive impact on my life, which I don't know if I can say that about most shows. I mean, it's probably this and related stuff, and then like Looney Tunes. Like those are like the shows that like really, I don't know, stuck out and like warms my heart. And honestly, I probably wouldn't be as big of a Batman fan if I didn't have this show to like groom me as a youngster. So it's phenomenal. I will be rewatching it soon, and probably be posting some clips as I come across the great ones. But yeah, I just if you haven't seen it, you need to. There's no reason why you shouldn't. And I'm gonna say it, although Al's gonna hate me for it. Go find the interviews with Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, Mark Hamill, Kevin Conroy, all the greats from this show, and their interviews, particularly about the Batman animated series. They're all phenomenal. You will not waste your time on any of those interviews. I think that's all the time we'll take for that. And check out our shows. We know that Josh and Dodgy are on the Flip Side Focus, me and Freya on the Definitive Crusade, and check out Monica Archer's articles and other work on geekerymagazine.com. Anything else I missed, guys?
No.
All right, gotta plug everything. So, and follow us on Twitter, tweet us, etc. Blah blah. I do want to hear from y'all. What are your favorite episodes? Tweet your favorite episodes to us. But yeah. All right, if nothing else, we will catch y'all next time.